He was a musician, composer, and all-around jazz ambassador. From the smoky clubs of 52nd Street in 1940s New York to world acclaim as an internationally recognized music educator. In fact, he coined the phrase America's classical music. I'm Fred Macy, and this is The Jazz Scene, dedicated to the preservation, promotion, and appreciation of jazz. Dr. Billy Taylor's musical career is legendary. When he was just a boy, his uncle gave him his first Art Tatum record, and Billy said, "I want to play just like that." And after a few lessons and a whole lot of listening, he did. Of course, what he had no way of knowing at the time is that the man he was listening to taught himself to play by ear. And Art Tatum had been studying records featuring not just one, but two pianos. So if you think Tatum and Taylor have a complex style, now you know why. Art Tatum remained a strong influence throughout Billy Taylor's life. Throughout his life's work, Billy fought as a spokesman, not only for the recognition of jazz as America's classical music, but also for the recognition of black musicians as key contributors to the American music scene, promoting jazz as a commentary against racial prejudice and as a powerful social force. He served as a Duke Ellington Fellow at Yale University, artistic advisor for jazz to the Kennedy Center for Performing Arts, and a board member on the National Council for the Arts. With more than 23 honorary doctoral degrees, Billy Taylor was also a recipient of two Peabody Awards and even became an air personality on the radio. His list of medals and awards goes on, including Grammys, Emmys, and even a Lifetime Achievement Award from Downbeat Magazine. But the man, the musician, always remained humble.
Billy Taylor, what are your earliest recollections of jazz music? What got you started?
Well, I had an uncle who played jazz. All of my family was musical, but this one uncle played jazz. Everybody else played European classical music and sang church music and so forth. And this one uncle just kind of swung and, you know, played this nice, interesting stuff. And I tried to get him to teach me, and he said no, but he gave me my first Fats Waller record. And I fooled around with that and copied some stuff off the record and tried to learn how to teach. I tried to teach myself, not very unsuccessfully. Took some piano lessons and began to come along a little faster and, you know, went back and said, I still want to learn to do what you do. And he gave me my first Art Tatum record. So that kind of got me off his back forever.
That's real steak to cut your teeth on, that's for sure.
That's for sure.
You got started, I guess, really in your career. You were in your 20s, and that would have put it in the 1940s.
Sure.
What was it like to perform with people, a young fellow like that just getting started, with people the caliber of a Billie Holiday, a Charlie Parker, a Coleman Hawkins?
It was fantastic. To work with Coleman Hawkins, Billie Holiday, and Ben Webster, and to work opposite Art Tatum, and to work with great drummers like Sid Catlin and so forth, was just phenomenal. And then to meet Dizzy Gillespie and Charlie Parker, who were just a few years older than I, and to see the kinds of explorations that they were making. And it was just a very exciting time and a very productive time for me.
What do you try to do with your music? What happens inside you when you touch that keyboard?
Well, it depends on where I'm playing and who I'm playing for. I play to someone, and usually the audience has a great deal to do with, or the perceived audience, if I'm making a record or playing on radio or television. You're really trying to share something that you feel strongly about, and say, hey, you know, this is fun, or this is great, or this is sad, or whatever it is, and, you know, I want to share this with you.
Let me put you in a specific context. You've played more than once at the White House. God, how does it feel to sit in front of the President of the United States and play?
Well, I played for several presidents, and it feels different with each one. But the office of the presidency is one that, you know, it's like a command performance. I mean, it's really a very special invitation, and you're playing for people who are essentially not jazz fans, but when they ask you to come, you're considered of a high artistic, on a high artistic level, so you're accepted in that spirit, and it's really a very exciting audience to play for.
I want to talk to you about the Jazzmobile and some of your work, particularly geared toward the youth of the inner cities. How did the Jazzmobile come about?
Well, Jazzmobile came about in the 60s when we were trying desperately to get the music, make the music available to people who couldn't afford to come to the nightclubs and to the jazz festivals and so forth. And out of the public performances on the streets and in the parks and in specific free areas, we began to go into the schools and do lecture demonstrations and workshops. And we even developed our own workshop clinic in Harlem, which this year I think has about 600-700 people studying there in a classroom setting and learning the how to improvise and how to express themselves in the jazz styles.
How did your concern originally come about for inner city kids? I mean, a lot of musicians just go their own way, take their honors, and keep on making money.
Well, I was concerned because many kids, both black and white, because of what they hear on the radio normally, are just simply not exposed to what I consider America's classical music. And since it is so important all around the world, people in every place that I visited around the world are aware of the music and its importance as an international, as a part of the international aesthetic. And for people here not to know about it just seemed unfortunate, and I wanted to do something about it.
Jazz truly is the one honest American music with American roots, isn't it?
It sure is. And it really speaks eloquently about Americana to both Americans and to people in other places.
What do you think of today's young jazz musicians coming up? And one particularly that comes to mind is Terry Lynn Carrington.
Well, as you probably know, I just did a featured profile on her this past Sunday on the Sunday Morning Show, and I'm really very pleased. I've known Terry Lynn since she was about 9 years old. She's a remarkable musician, and what she does transcends the fact that she's a female. She's just an excellent musician who, in a very male-dominated business, has carved her own niche and is going to go on, I think, to really great things. I think she's going to be like a Mary Lou Williams and some other outstanding Toshiko, outstanding women musicians who just really command the respect by their musicianship.
Who else do you see coming up these days?
Oh, quite a few. There was another young lady in the piece that I did who I think is very good, Patrice Rushen. Jerry Allen is a fine pianist. I've already done a piece on a woman named Jane Eyre Bloom is really terrific. There are a lot of young women, but there are also a lot of young men. There are a lot of really interesting Marcus Roberts, who's with who's a pianist with Wynton Marsalis now, and just Kevin Eubanks. So many very talented young people that as soon as you begin to name names, the list just becomes longer and
the
longer.
The dominoes start to go down, don't they?
Yeah. Sure.
It would seem that you've done just about everything a man could do that would be very satisfying to himself in your field. What do you do next? What kinds of projects or things are in your future as you see them, or would you like to have in your future?
Well, I've just been commissioned to write a work for the Juilliard String Quartet and my trio. So that's going to be a different kind of challenge. I'm really looking forward to that. And I'm also doing, I'd really like to do some television things that are more performance oriented, and I'm really looking forward to doing that.
Okay. Billy, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us. It's been a pleasure.
VG and I were invited to a recital of his trio at a small college in New Jersey. Now, I didn't get into DJ work until I was 38 years old. Late bloomer, okay? Being on the radio is just something I always wanted to do, so why not? Anyway, I was both a latecomer and a newcomer, and a lot of the family thought I was just going through a phase, living out sort of a pipe dream. Well, when Billy Taylor enthusiastically pumped my hand, gave VG a huge hug, and planted a big wet one on her cheek, my kid brother's eyes bugged out. His mouth dropped open, and I could almost hear a thud as his chin hit the floor. I was glad we brought him along, because he spread the word when he got home, and my newfound career gained a sudden respect within the family. The concert itself was beyond belief. There weren't more than 40 or 50 of us in the room, and the Billy Taylor Trio was really on that afternoon, really connecting. You could almost see the energy passing from one player to the other, as one solo followed another, the piano, to the drums, to the bass, back to the piano, back to the drums, back to the bass, from one musician to another, and back again. It was really something to behold, and a time I'll never forget. I want to thank you for spending some time with us here at the Mark of Jazz, and I hope you've enjoyed being here as much as I've enjoyed having you. Now, if you'd like to listen to something special or just want to talk about what you'd like to hear most, simply leave me a comment, either here at the Jazz Scene or at the website itself, markofjazz.com. And by the way, until next time, remember what Miles Davis said. Don't play what's there. Play what's not there.